Got some numbers for you now. Yesterday at the TED conference, an economist was making a comparison. Apparently, the global economy is about $55 trillion. The U.S. economy is about $14 trillion. But for one reason or another, it's estimated that $655 trillion in obligations and so-called securitized derivatives is out there in the financial market, waiting either to explode and take out the entire global economy or to be slowly sort of retired as we deal with this crisis. How did we get in that situation? What is the metaphor? Economists, policymakers are all struggling to come up with a metaphor for how the financial sector could get $655 trillion worth of debt when we only have a $55 trillion economy. Well, perhaps addiction is a decent metaphor for this. Joining us now is Dr. Gregory Burns, author of Iconoclast, A Neuroscientist Reveals How to Think Differently. He also directs the Center for Neuropolicy at Emory University. Dr. Burns, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
How does addiction explain the kind of numbers in the financial sector that have so warped the global economy?
You can look at addiction really from two different perspectives. The most obvious one, and the one that most people are familiar with, is simply just by looking at behavior. So you ask yourself, I mean, what are the signs of addiction? Well, it's an increasing tolerance to whatever you're addicted to. So it doesn't matter if it's heroin or in the finance industry, I would say the finance industry has been addicted for a long time to increasing levels of risk and return. Now, what are the hallmarks of that? Well, you need more and more of whatever your drug is to get the same kick. So, you know, like a heroin addict, you would see in the finance industry an increasing tolerance of risk. So, you know, decades ago, it would be insane for banks to leverage their capital so highly. You wouldn't see people, you know, taking the risks that they have. But now, I mean, look what's happened. We have leverage ratios of 20, 30, or 40, and you see banks like Bank of America, whose value is essentially going to zero because of a very rather small proportion of their assets being bad, but because they're so highly leveraged, you know, it's worthless. Now, the other way you can look at it is actually a little bit more interesting, I think, which is what actually happens in people's brains when they get addicted to something. Now, one thing that we've learned from neuroscience is that the brain uses probably what we call a common neural currency to signal value. And that has a lot to do with the dopamine system, although we don't know the exact details of that. It seems that it doesn't really matter what motivates you or what kind of reward you pursue, whether it's money, whether it's food, whether it's sex, or whether it's heroin, it all seems to flow through the same parts of the brain. And we're just beginning to understand the conversions between these things. But what we do know is that...
I definitely want to hear the sort of end side of it, but, you know, this addiction to risk thing confuses me a little bit because it seems for the longest time there was almost no risk in these transactions. There was a lot of profit. But it seems like there was sort of the idea of risk, but it really wasn't risky in the same way that a gambler who's addicted is at the roulette table knowing that at any moment they could lose everything. Where's the dopamine come from?
Well, as you were saying that, it reminds me of many things that drug addicts have said to me as well, which is, you know, I have the thing under control. There's really no danger. I'm not going to get addicted to it. I think it's an illusion. You know, people get lured into the complacency because there's no immediate consequences, because indeed the risk was passed on to third parties and fourth parties and so on. But ultimately, it's still there. And it's not like people in finance have the inability to make those calculations. I mean, clearly they do. I mean, they can calculate it. It's just that they choose to ignore it and delude themselves into believing that really it's not that risky. But in fact, you know, it's an increasing tolerance to it. It's like kind of a slippery slope.
So what is the sort of takeaway here? I mean, do we now have a set of warning signs for this happening again, or do we need to worry about rehab for the entire banking industry and how long they're going to be in it?
I think we're into the rehab phase. Well, actually, I don't think we're even into the rehab phase. I think we're in the intervention stage at the moment, where the patient is still in denial. I mean, think about it. So the TARP program was essentially, you know, giving a small dose of heroin to the heroin addict and say, here's a little bit of heroin. We want you to manage your addiction and get well. And, you know, we know how well that's worked out.
Well, by the end of this, I suspect the dollar is going to be about as potent as methadone in terms of, you know, helping the economy. Isn't the rehab profile here a little more urgent than, say, for a drug addict?
I would say so. And, you know, like any good addiction program, the first thing the patient has to do is admit that it has a problem.
And we're definitely not there yet. Dr. Gregory Burns, thanks so much. A lot to think about there. Iconoclast, a neuroscientist, reveals how to think differently is his book. He directs the Center for Neuropolicy at Emory University, where they're thinking about addiction as a model for what has happened to the financial industry. Thank you, Dr. Burns.
My pleasure.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.